All right, so like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was davening Shabbos morning at Lev HaTorah. And what I find fascinating is looking at what like Shana Aleph and Shana Bet guys read as Sfarim. I guess it's like funny how much things have changed. You don't see very many Jastros in the yeshiva anymore. Once upon a time, like I remember when I was there, everybody had a Jastro. In fact, they took a picture of my makom, not me learning, for like the Mivaseret brochure 23 years ago, and they blotted out with, I guess, you know, the graphic artist, the Jastro from my spot, because they were nervous that, you know, he was a little controversial or whatever. So anyway, there's all the stuff there. So this kid has this book called, like, I don't remember what it was, but it had like a catchy title. So I was curious what it was, and it happens to be stuff on Tanakh. So I've never read the author, but I've listened to a little bit here and there, and his name is somewhat known. So I don't know. There was a little bit of extra time in shul. I didn't bring anything of my own to read, really. And so I read this article by Rabbi Jesse Horn on Parshas Chayisara, and I was like, this really actually is excellent. So the only problem is that I didn't have the sefer. So I was back there last Shabbos, same place. And I read it one more time. So I've committed a lot of it to memory. But usually, like when I read an article by Rabbi Sacks, I have Rabbi Sacks in front of me as I'm learning and preparing the chavura. So it might be a slight bit disjointed. I apologize for that. But I thought about trying to find the kid whose place it is. It'd be like, hey, can I just borrow it? But like, he's never there. So either he's one of their like Shana Gimel Chayalim, who like is like on act, you know, in on duty now or whatever in training, or he's just not so stark. I don't know, but whatever. Okay, fine.
So you call Rabbi Horn. If you need Rabbi Horn, Eitan can hook you up.
Okay, it seems like a really good guy, so Eitan's really lucky to have the opportunity to learn with him. Okay, so he has two basic questions that I want to start with, and we'll add a little bit more as we go along. His first question is, why would Rivka choose to actually go with Eliezer? Right? It seems like a very hard one. Here it is, that Rivka is, good question how old she is. He does quote the Medrash that says that she was 3, but also at the same time, quotes another source, I don't remember what it was, that she might have been as old as 13 or 14, which I think makes a very big difference. I'm a lot more comfortable with her being 13 or 14, not quite as comfortable with her being 3. But even if she was 13, 14, why would Rivka choose to follow Eliezer? Now, obviously, from the lens of 2021, or even the lens of 2000. I remember teaching this in the early 2000s, probably to a bunch of your kids. And I remember this was like a great opportunity to like, you know, use like a life lesson. Like we don't talk to strangers. And, you know, Rivka herself obviously does talk to strangers. But, you know, from our perspective, like we don't do that. So why would Rivka choose to follow Eliezer? It doesn't make any sense. That's one. And the second question, which he asked, which I thought was fascinating, is who does Rivka identify best with from the family of the Avot? And that, again, is something that we don't have to answer off the bat. But I think as we like look through the psukim tonight, I think that's a question that really should like be in the back of our head, because I think that there is a lot to do with that question. Okay, so those are our two questions. So let's start from the end of Perek Chav Dalet. Vayochlu vayishtuhu v'anashim ashrimo vayalinu vayikumu v'boker vayomer shalchuni l'adoni. He ate and he drank, he and the people that were with him, and they slept, and they got up in the morning, and he says, let me go to my master. Years ago, when my sister came back from Israel, I remember she brought up the idea that when you have multiple verbs right after each other, like this pasuk, where it's one after another, it's action, 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 that the text is trying to tell us something. And I know that we've over the years discussed that usually that it's a fast-paced action, and the message is that like the person just needed to be moving. So he ate and he drank and he went to sleep and they got up and then he says, like, I want to go back. So he and his crew do all that they need to do. And then in the morning, he's like, time to go home. So now remember that right before this, they said, this is, you know, a sign from God. This is amazing. She's all yours. And now in the morning, Vayomer Achia v'ima teishev anara itanu yamimo asur achar teilech. So her brother and her mother say, let the girl stay with us for yamim, a year, o asur, or 10 months, and afterwards we will go. Okay, so what are some of the problems with this pasuk?
10 months should be before a year.
Okay, why?
Because that's it. That's how you negotiate.
No, you go the other way.
That's a counter offer. Why am I negotiating against myself?
No. You start with a year. Like, all right, fine, 10 months.
But there was no conversation.
Well, you don't know.
No response. I agree with you, but that there was no response.
Right, but I mean,
they were all going. Why would they be Achar Telech? Is it just her, or is it all of us? You translate it as all of us.
Achar Telech. Afterwards, you will go.
Oh,
yeah.
You will go. Not, you said we will.
Achar Telech. Afterwards, you will go.
Oh no! Actually, sorry. Achar Telech. After she will go. Actually, it's interesting. You know what? A tough could mean she or you.
Like
right. No, it's a good. I assume that it's Telech is. You will go, but I'm not even sure. I don't know. Anybody have an English like translation like close by? I have a Yechezkel in English. So that's interesting. It happens to be that by accident I have a Mikrov's Gedolos, which won't give me an English translation, but it'll give me.
What's the order, right? Because otherwise, you know, it might be more appropriate to say
Ve'achalter. The truth is, I'm actually looking at the puzzle again. It's probably the girl, because Teshev Hanara Itanu, she will stay with us, Yamim O'asor, a year or 10 months, Achar Telech, and afterwards she will go. That's likely what it is. But
it's missing a bump.
You're saying it should be Ve'achar Telech?
Yeah. Yamim O'asor, Achar Telech means either after you go or after she goes. But it doesn't make sense. It's not, and then she will go.
The Zaharia says, then you may go.
Oh, so that's interesting. Yeah.
And the Tanakh says she will go.
Okay. Which one? That's Art Scroll. All right, so got Machlokas, Art Scroll, and Zaharia.
Also, it translates Yamama Wasar as some 10 days.
Some 10 days, yeah. But, right, that, I mean, Rashi says, Asor is Yod Chad Chodashim, and then to Surli's point, Vim Tomar Yamin Mamash, Ein Derech Amvakshim Levarkesh Davar Mu'at, Im Lo Tirtze Lanu Meruba Mizeh. So it can't be really days, because Yamim is a year. So he says that you start off with a year, and then, hey, if a year is not, like, if in a year, I think Shmuel said that if a year is not enough, okay, it's too much, so then 10 months, right? So, okay.
Is it common to use the word yamim to translate as a year?
Rashi's clearly bothered by that, because he says, yamim shana, kamo yamim tia gulato, like we have in Perek Chaf Hey and Pasuk Chaf Tet and Vayikra, Yamim Tia Geulato, which we know is a year you'll have to redeem it. So the answer is that Yom can go either way. It could be a year or a day. So I guess it depends on the context. So Sfaria probably says what? How does it translate Yamim?
Yamim Osar is one phrase. Is some 10 days. Like, I guess 2 or 2 to 10.
Yeah, I'm curious where they get that from.
It's just an expression, you know? So stay with us sometime.
Right.
Yeah. just don't know what you were planning discussing.
No, but I mean, it's definitely interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, good questions. Why doesn't it say V'achar Teiv? Say again?
Gotta wait for the check to clear.
They got cash. That was it. The Avos were in an all cash business. So that.
Recording?
Am I what?
Recording.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, usually it's in WhatsApp. Now you're recording. Everybody else.
Yeah. So okay, fine. So again, it's a good question. Those are a lot of things to ponder. But really, the big question is, what is the purpose of that Yamimo Asur, right? When they're trying to, what's their argument for doing a little bit of a delay?
I think if they're hoping, if in fact we're talking about a month and not days, that, you know, all right, you come back and then it's just going to be a whole new negotiation.
Okay, so what, right, so that's I think the underlying thought is they really don't want to send her. So if they delay it sometime, whether it's a few days or, you know, more like 10 months to a year, their thinking is, well, you know, we could reopen the negotiation, see if we do better. Meaning in a moment of weakness last night, we proclaimed, oh my God, this is, you know, divinely inspired. Even we see it. And therefore, you have to let her, you have to let her go. Okay, there's truth to that. But okay, that's their... Meaning that's their motivation that they're not revealing, but at least to the outside eye, why are they saying we need a little bit more time? Right. So either let's assume it's a few days, right? So if it's a few days, they're saying, listen, we gotta get her ready for the road. She's, you know, scared. She's nervous. Like one of the mafarshim I saw, as I was quickly looking for all of our other answers, says that, like, she needs some time just to settle. But if she's staying for Yamimo Asur, if we're going to say it's a year to 10 months, so then what we could argue is, what they're saying is we need some time to prepare for the wedding, right? We need to get her dressed. So you can't make that stuff overnight. So they say, give us a little bit of time to prepare. I only wanted that because in just a few moments, when we finish the Psukim, when we take a look at the Rashbam is bothered, I think, by some of that, and that's where he's coming from. So, Vayomer Aleim Al Ta...
Maybe it's a little play on words, right? I mean, the word Bechal is extraneous. It's really not necessary. Maybe it's talking about Le'achel, to delay.
Oh, that's someone... Oh, Le'achel. Oh, I hear.
Because if you go a couple words ahead... Don't delay me. So maybe it's because why is that word necessary there at all?
Well, and how would you how teishav and arayt tan yamimo asor? Oh, you're saying
vitela.
I don't know. I think that it would be like achar is like the transitional word that actually makes it read like a little smoothly. I think Vitelech might be like a little bit like...
Depends on the trap.
Uh-huh. I hear. I mean, I'm more bothered by why the V isn't there, whether it's V'achar Telech or V'Telech. I don't know. I'm not even sure where you find an answer like that. But if you want to check Sfaria, you could look at all the Mefarshim on Achar Teilech and see if anybody's bothered by it. There's actually, I found a new Mephorash who I really can't identify. I Googled it and got an answer of who the person is. Unfortunately, it said he's the author of Shmir Shams Kilchasa. I took it off my shelf and it's not the same person. So I don't know. But Berchad Asher is actually a Mephorash that Sefaria has that might address something along those lines. We're actually going to see something by the Berachat Asher pretty soon. Okay, so he says, don't delay me. God has made me successful. Please send me on my way. Now, I think it's interesting. His Vashem Hitzliach Darki could be read either of two ways. Either he's saying that out of genuine frumkeit, right? He really believes it, which I think is true because throughout his entire story, he does constantly invoke the name of God as the source of all that he's doing. But I think also, which is just a thought, is perhaps he's going back to what they had said previously, right? Because they said, Me'ashem yatsa davar, this came out of God. So V'ashem yitzliach darki, you said to me that God made me successful, so I'm saying back to you, you know, the same thing. So Pasuk Nun Zayin is a weird one. Vayomru nikra le'na'ara v'nishal apia. So they say, okay, let's call the girl and ask her. So what's their motivation there? But why do they say, let's call the girl? What are they hoping is going to happen? Right, they're hoping that the girl will say no, which means that they really are doing a poor job. They did a poor job of reading their kid because she is not part of the conversation at all. And then Vayikru l'Rivka vayomrei leha telchi ma'isha zeh. They call Rivka and they say to her, do you want to go with this guy? Vatomrei leif. Right, like immediately she goes, she says, I will go. Now that sends us back to our original question, which was, why in the world would Rivka choose to follow Eliezer? And clearly they missed the boat and didn't realize how ready she would be to go with Eliezer. Fine. But so those are questions that we have to deal with. So they send Rivka, their sister, her meineket, right, her babysitter, her nursemaid, whatever, that Eved Avraham and the servant of Avraham and his men. Now, interesting. In Pasuk Nun Chet, how does it refer to him?
Haish.
And then in Pasuk Nun Tet, he's called Eved, right? Eved Avraham. Now, if you read the Pesukim throughout the whole thing, you'll see that he bounces back. Sometimes he's Eved, sometimes he's Ish. Now, I think that's something just to think about. So,
again, we know it's a sister, and who's the Vishalchu that's sending a Chosam? There's only one Chosam sending a sister.
So it presumably is Lavan with the aid of his mother, the same way Pasuk Nun Hey is Vayomer Achia V'ima.
Right, but they didn't have to say a
chosam. Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, maybe you can answer that despite the fact that she was Vatomer Eileich, she's like, I'll leave, they still send her as Rivka, their sister, as opposed to just Rivka. I mean, it would be interesting to go to take a look at Vayetze, right, and see if Lavan and his daughters, right, how the familial bond is, you know, referenced there, or are they just Leah and Rachel towards the end of that story, meaning devoid of the family bond. It's something to definitely compare to. Okay, so I think the question is, why did Rivka choose to follow Eliezer? Any thoughts?
Well, wasn't she there yet? Oh, go ahead.
We know that Lavan was a nightmare of a person.
Okay.
Why should we think that he was only a nightmare to Yaakov? He was probably a difficult guy to live with, and he was running the household.
Uh-huh. So you're saying that she has no reason to stay because her brother is a really difficult person.
She probably couldn't wait to get away.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm not saying that that's not a possibility.
Might depend heavily on her age, too. I mean, what are we going with age-wise? Big difference, even then, between a 3-year-old and a 12-year-old, or however old you might say she was.
That whole story about her being 3 makes no sense. So if she's 3 and she's ready to get married, then she's also ready to leave the household.
If she's 3 years old,
that whole age thing makes no sense.
If she's 3 years old and she waters the camels for 10 camels, then she is much stronger than any 3-year-old you've ever met. Even as a 12-year-old, it's a little bit harder, but okay, like you can see it. It's just, it's a lot of work. I don't know. 3-year-olds, even like, even on this side of the ocean where 3-year-olds, you know, sometimes walk to school by themselves, physically they don't have the same strength as a you know, teenager-ish kid. Okay, so I mean, Henry, I hear what you're saying. I don't know. I've spent a lot of time going back and forth over the, now this is our 15th cycle that we're starting tonight. So I've gone through a lot of times whether Lavan is good, whether Lavan is bad and whatever, but it's not so simple. But yeah, there definitely are, if not psychopathic tendencies, there definitely are very troubling trends in his behavior, and I could see where it'd be very difficult to live with him. On the other hand,
when he tells Yaakov, "Everything you have is mine," and completely ignores the fact that Yaakov worked for him for all those years, it's a little bit of a psycho.
Right. So I wish I had Rabbi Horn's book in front of me, because I believe Double Identity, I think that's what the name of the book is, or something like that. Because I do believe that in the footnotes, and there are a lot of footnotes, where he goes, he talks about how some of the things might, you know, that we might look at as like negative, it shows that he has a strong affinity to like his family, right? The Habanot Benotai, they're my family, meaning he's not this horrible person that doesn't care about his children, but he views everybody as an extension of him, right? Like that's, oh, he's the grandpa that would take them to like the ice cream store and take care of them, and make sure that they're happy and all that. He might have been a shrewd businessman, but it's tough. Yeah, but I could hear that she wants to escape her family. They're all wicked people or horrible people, and she wants out. Okay, so really, you were about to say something.
So she heard the story from Eliezer. She you know, the whole exchange at the well. So certainly she, you know, maybe if she's a spiritual person, she's like, wow, like what are the odds? There's maybe some divine thing behind this thing. She gets the bracelet and the other jewels. Her family's excited initially at this prospect, welcoming him into the house. It made it all sound like, hey, Eliezer said, I'm here to find a wife for my master's son. And everything sounded like it was all going well. She was not aware of this little plan. Like you said, that she's not in the room. Her parents have, her mother and her brother have some second thoughts when they try to renegotiate this thing. She wasn't in on it. When she left to sleep the night before, it was a done deal.
Right.
So why, of course, she's just going along with the original plan.
Okay, excellent. So yeah, those are all, I think you're saying a lot of different things, and they all could be, you know, either she Eliezer catches her attention by some of the things at the well, or, you know, the shiny jewelry makes her feel good, or, you know, the excitement from her family without seeing that there's a new subplot that's like emerging would all motivate her to go. Okay. So let's take a look at what the Mefarshim say. So Rashi says she wants to, she says, I'll go, right? And this is all on her own. She says, I want to go, even if you don't want me to go. Meaning, if you were to say, like, you're not interested in me going, I don't care. I'm going to go anyway. Okay, so that's Rashi. The Rashbam says, Eileich, eino choshesh li'itakei b'shul kishud atzmi. So the Rashbam says that I'm not worried about staying bishvil kishur atzmi, to get myself like dressed up and decorated for the wedding. Like, I'd rather be a simple, plain bride with nothing special than spending 10 to 12 months here preparing for my wedding. I just want to go. So it's an interesting question. You know, what motivates Rashi to throw in the last four words? That I will go even in defiance of you. And what makes the Rashbam kind of shy away from that and say, like, Eileich, like, your whole premise is that you want to wait 12 months or 10 months to get me ready for the wedding, even if that's not your motivation, but that's what you outwardly say. She says, I don't care. I don't need that time to get married, meaning I'm okay just getting married tomorrow. So, you know, it's a good question. Which one? Again, l'may nafkamina, probably nothing. But it's an interesting question as to which one is more comfortable. So let's take a look at the Berachat Asher, quoted by Sfarya. So he says, Rashi Dibur Matzil V'Tomer Eilech, Me'atzmi V'Afim L'Chan Rutzim Adkan. So he quotes our Rashi. He says, Efshar L'Shmoa Min HaTshuva HaKetzara Eilech, Haskama L'Alecha Kan V'Achshav. So it's possible that when you read her short answer of one word, Eilech, it is a Haskama, to go right now. U'kidivrei HaRashbam, and it's consistent with what the Rashbam says, I'm not interested in getting all decorated, just let me go. So he asks our question, where does Rashi get this hatzara dramatit, this dramatic like language of I have to go? You can tell he's contemporary, right? This is not one of the Rishonim. V'ulai shomeya Rashi v'tshuva eilech mashu min ha'achleti ki'ilu Rivka umeret. It could be that Rashi hears in the words et eilech something else. Eilech kan v'achshav. U'ke'ilu nishala kan shtei shelot. It's as though she's being asked two questions. Do you want to go? And gam b'asher l'shiduch kishalatzmo. Right, so it's a question of, do you want to go now? Gam right, l'moyda yitzia. Do you want to go now? But also, the question is, are you even agreeable to this shidduch at all? So what's she saying? She's saying, Eilech, I'll go. Yes, I'm going to go with the guy now. And the Afimin Chemrutzim, even if you really don't approve much of this shidduch, I'm going to go as well. So that's what the Berachat Asher says. So that's interesting. He's explaining that what motivating Rashi is, that they're really asking more than just, do you want to go now? They're asking, do you want to go with this guy at all? Meaning, do you accept this marriage proposal?
How does Rashi's Rashi respond to those two?
Me'atzmi, that I'm, the afi mincham, the eilech is the obvious, I will go. That answer is the question, do you want to go? But me'atzmi, the Avi Mechem Ritzim is that even if you don't agree to this shidduch, I've agreed, I've accepted the terms of this marriage, and I'm willing to go.
That's the question is, are you okay with the shidduch? And that's where he's saying the question is, and Rashi's saying...
Right, meaning I think they're saying that they're saying we have these doubts, and that she's saying, Eilech me'atzmi, I'm willing to go on my own, Avi Mechem Ritzim, even if you don't agree to this marriage proposal, I'm okay with it. I think that's... Now, the Netziv has another problem. He says, Hatelchi ma'ish hazeh, Hatelchi atam mibaye. Do I even need the words, Hatelchi atam mibaye? All I need is Hatelchi. Right? Why do I need ima'ish hazeh? Right? Meaning, that if you want to shave words, so say, Vayomreila Hatelchi, do you want to go? Which is, by the way, 100% consistent with what she answers. Right, she says a one-word answer, Eilech. It's not just that she's a little kid, right? You know, how is school? Good. How is lunch? Fine, right? It's not that it's just a one-word answer. That's all she has to say is, Eilech, I'll go. But really, all they have to say is, Hatelchi. Obviously, it's Ima Isha Zeh. So the Netziv offers a different answer. So he says...
Really? You could say that Ima Isha Zeh is talking about Akshav, as opposed to in 10 or 12 months or in some other time period. Like he said, I arranged this marriage. I'm going back home. We're going back home. I don't need to do anything else. When you're ready, you're going to send her down to get married, which was what they proposed. They said, we're going to keep her here. And I think by saying his halech imayish hazeh, it's about like right now.
Right. So actually, it's funny. I read the Netziv, but I didn't realize it until now. When you pointed out what you said, so the Netziv says in his right after the period, Hatelchi atami bai. It's not just it should say Hatelchi, it should say Hatelchi ata with an ayin. Do you want to go now? Right? That would be the right way of getting, certainly, which is your point. That would be the right wording to say, and yet it says Ima Isha Zeh. So Amnam Lahalan Yivor Shayahadavar Kashela Leishevi Magamal. It was hard for her to sit on the camel. Ukedita bereish mesecha psachim mishum biatuta degmalim. She has a fear of camels. V'im haytami takevish ma eze meshech haytami tragelet lishev beatzma al gamal beta. So if she stayed there for a while, you know what they could do? Camel therapy. And after 10 to 12 months of camel therapy, she would be more comfortable going on a camel. Ohayu machinim bishvila ofen acher lavo b'derech rechoka. Or they would have 10 to 12 months to find or build another method of travel, right? Like a wagon or a chariot. I assume that at this point in time, they had already discovered and created wagons and chariots, but we don't know that for sure, right? Yesterday, Malki and I went to Pant B'melach in Efrat. So if you've never been there, it's definitely worth going if you're in Israel. So we went just to eat there, but 3 years ago we took our kids there. It is a like sourdough bread making workshop. So they opened up like 6-7 years ago, and they have this massive sign. I was like tempted to take a picture because it is really cool, where they have like the history of bread making in the entire world. And at the end, you know, like they'll talk about, you know, they put themselves in there and certain like key dates, like in Israeli history of bread making. But I remember when we went there, they did say that like it was a big deal when Yosef says, you know, give them bread, he was talking about a different type of bread, meaning like Egypt, the guy wanted to argue, historically had introduced bread making at around the time of Yosef. And so maybe agalot, we don't have agalot, I think, in Tanakh until Yosef, and we don't have chariots until Yetzias Mitzrayim. So maybe such a thing did not fully exist yet. So they were going to spend 10 to 12 months trying to figure out how they could transport her. Avalata ain't eitza kim l'shevedim ha'eved al gamalo. But right now they're saying to her, Atalchim Eisha Zeh, you who is afraid of camels, will you go with this person? And you could almost picture her saying, with Tomer, like, yeah, I'll go. You know, like there's it's an anxiety-laden statement, but she says she'll go, right? And that's Zeh Sheshelu im tirtzel lalachad imo yachad. Are you willing to go with him? I don't know. So we've got the Rashbam, we've got Rashi, we've got the Netziv. Yeah, the Netziv is definitely coming from a very different place. But you could make the argument that if they want to delay her, right, just saying, hey, do you want to go with her? So what's their answer? Her answer going to be, yeah, come on. Remember yesterday we said this was going to be fun. We were all on the same page. That's wonderful. Now what's happening? They need to dissuade her from going. So what's their way of dissuading her? You know, honey, you're really afraid of camels. If you go, are you going to be able to manage this trip through the desert on a camel? Wait, we'll figure it out. So I don't know, maybe that's a way to make the Netziv work. Okay, so we're still stuck with...
Maybe Aisha Zeh in the Pasuk doesn't have to be referring to Eliezer. Maybe it's referring to the Shidduch. It's referring to, you want to go with this marriage.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, that would... Mati, that's...
Rashi.
Right, I was going to say, Mati, that would definitely like answer Shmuel's question better than I did. And that also would reconcile the Eved versus, you know, Ish in Nun Chet versus Nun Tet. Okay.
There's a lot of debate here. There's a lot of debate, right? There's extra words, like you said before, a lot of action words, a lot of verbs. But the whole Nun Zayin is not necessary, right? It's indicating that there's probably a heck of a lot more back and forth than what's in these couple of psukim, obviously, in the background. So at the end, she's like, leave me alone. I'm just going to go.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that Mati's saying that she was probably there for the back and forth, but they're like, let's just ask her, not like let's call her and bring her in, but like let's just cut to the chase and ask her what she wants. Okay, so here's where we're at.
Nikra, you're calling her. You are calling her. She wasn't there. Now you grew a little.
Right, but the point being, it's not like she doesn't know what's flying over here. There's all this back and forth disagreement, not necessarily in front of her. Point is fine. Let's see what she wants to do.
I hear. No, it's definitely a good point. I'm not sure. Okay, so only because it is on your end very late. I'm going to skip a little bit. We've settled into more like a 35-minute like clip, and probably if we were to do this like with all the psukim, it would take us another 15 minutes or so. So I'm going to condense a little bit. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi Pasuk Samach Zayin, it's the middle source. And I think that we, just because I think it's important for question number two, who is she most like? Like, let's take a look at what Rashi says. Ha'o'el Saraimo, va'yivya'o elav, and I say dugma Saraimo. She becomes like a version of Sarah. Kolomar v'arehi Sarah imo. To say she is Sarah, his mom. She calls man, she Sarah kayemet haya ner daluk me'erev Shabbat le'erev Shabbat. So long as Sarah had been alive, there was a candle that was burning from one week to the other. The dough was always, you know, rising in abundance. And there was a cloud that went over the tent. When she died, all of this ceased. When it comes back. Okay, so Rashi is telling us the answer to question number two is, who is she most like? She's most like Sarah. Right, that's what she has. So I'm going to ask you, of all the people in Avram's house, who is she actually most like?
Avram.
Why?
She did the chesed herself. She ran to serve the people. That's what Avram used to do himself.
Okay, good. So she has the chesed component of Avram as the server to Eliezer. Okay, why else is she like Avram?
Somewhere else.
Right. She leaves her homeland. I just, if you take a look, we don't have to actually look at the entire thing inside. Where is it? Can't find it.
Sarah left her homeland also.
Sarah does. So I can't find the exact words. I thought I had it on the page. But when it talks about how she's going to go, it says that it uses language that's very similar to the beginning of Lech Lecha, right? She's going to leave Me'artzecha Umi Beit Aviha. She's leaving her father's home, and she's willing to do all that. That's like a really, really, really big deal. So she sounds a lot. And she's going through an experience that is very, very similar to Avraham. So the question is, who can she most identify with? It can go either way. You could certainly make the argument that she goes and she is very much like Avraham. Okay, so why does she leave? What motivates her to go? So I want to suggest the following. This is Rabbi Horan's idea, is that when she sees Eliezer, and Eliezer talks to her at the well, and he speaks of this God, and he speaks of the test, and that's what he recounts to the family. He says, "I came to the well, and I said I need someone who's going to give. Well, I'm going to ask for a little, and she's going to give a lot." She hears all this and says, "Wait a second. This is philosophically someone that I could truly identify with. If he's coming from a household that in fact has those values, she's making the argument that that's what I've been looking for all my life. That and therefore it could be that it's not as crazy. Yes, does it seem strange that a girl is willing to pick up, divorce her family, go thousands of, you know, whatever, to a new family that she's never been with, that she's never met, she maybe has heard of as like the legacy of Avraham? Yeah, it could be that she heard of the legacy of Avraham. It could be Avraham's famous enough that word trickles back home about some of the things that he's accomplished. But on the other hand, on the most basic level, she doesn't leave for the wealth. She doesn't leave for the power and the glory. But what she leaves for is the opportunity to live in a world that is much more dedicated to her value system than her own family. And I think what comes from there is, you can make the argument that Lavan was not psychopathic. You can make the argument that Lavan was not a horrible person, but what it's really hard to do, no matter how hard we try, is to come out and say that Lavan was a person of good values, a person overflowing with abundance of kindness. So what she sees is that there's an opportunity to leave one type of family and join in one that's much more aligned with her value system. And that, in fact, is what happens.